Good day, I'm Jackie Judd with Health on the Hill. Today, a reporter roundtable to discuss where things stand with healthcare reform. We will look back at the last few days as well as look forward to what's coming up when Congress returns from its July 4th recess. Joining me today, as always, Mary Agnes Carey of Kaiser Health News. We also welcome Julie Rovner of National Public Radio and Jeffrey Young of The Hill. Welcome to you all. Let's talk for a few minutes about where we left things after Congress finished its first big push on healthcare reform. Walk us through where things stand on the House side, Julie.
Well, I think this has really been kind of undercovered. There's been so much really furious negotiating going on in the Senate that people haven't paid a lot of attention to what's going on in the House, which has really been pretty remarkable. There is one bill that has been agreed to by the chairman of all three major committees that are looking at health care.
All Democrats, of course.
This is not a bipartisan effort in the House. This is a pretty partisan effort. But still, you've got the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, the Energy and Commerce Committee, the Education and Labor Committee, putting out what they call their tri-committee bill. Last week, we saw hearings at all three committees. In fact, the Energy and Commerce Committee had 3 days of hearings. I think what was partly important about those hearings is they let everybody on all sides get their venting processes done. They had the single payer people up at all three committees arguing for single payer. The Republicans got to have their witnesses talking about government rationing and all kinds of terrible things that could happen. And I think that was actually important for the process to let everybody come up, chew over this very large bill. What we haven't seen yet are the financing for this bill, and we haven't seen a score from the Congressional Budget Office. So we still don't know how much it will cost, and people think it could be pretty significant. Maybe
it's probably a generous bill.
It's a generous bill. It's got generous subsidies. It will probably be more than $1.5 trillion over 10 years. We'll have to wait and see. But certainly, given where the House was, the last time around during the Clinton administration, when the Energy and Commerce Committee couldn't even report a bill out, and when the Education and Labor Committee reported two bills, one of which was a single payer bill, I think the House is on a much better or more consolidated path, shall we say, this time, and probably on a better timetable to meet what the president wants in terms of getting a bill out that would probably meet the president's requirements or what the president has laid out as his requirements for putting something together.
Jeffrey, let's move to the Senate side. Where do things stand generally?
Well, the dynamic is quite a bit different in the Senate, as anyone who knows anything about Congress might have guessed. There are two committees working on the bill. One is the Senate Finance Committee, and I think we'll probably get to that in a moment. But then there's the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which is chaired by Ted Kennedy, but he's very sick, still tending to
Senator
a brain tumor.
So
Senator Chris Dodd from
him.
Connecticut is overseeing it, which changes the dynamics quite a bit. Ted Kennedy is obviously recognized as a national leader on this issue, and just given the folk ways of Congress, Senator Dodd is somewhat limited in how much control I think he can assert over the process because it's not technically his committee and not technically his staff. What's happening in that committee has unfolded also in a much more partisan way than in the Finance Committee. The committee did 2 weeks of markup right before Congress left for break, leaving out some of the most important and contentious parts of the bill, such as whether to have a public plan. What else is missing? Well, there's certainly nothing in there about financing and what kinds of what employers will be required to do in terms of offering benefits. The Republicans put forward, I think it started out at 400 amendments during the markup. Many of them were the same basic thing debated over and over again. And then they left town without finishing their work. And I don't know what that might mean about the prospects for when they get back, but it's just hard to do it in the Senate. In addition to which, through the rank and file members of the Senate on both parties, there is a wide array of opinions about the way to go. Starting on the sort of far right, senators with that mindset don't like anything about what they're seeing. Don't want to see any of this go forward at all, at least in the form that the Democrats are generally basing it on, starting, as Julie said, with what President Obama campaigned on. And then if you move over to the left, there are a few people who, to put it mildly, are a little chafed that the party has left behind single payer completely, and increasingly nervous that what they view as the fallback kind of compromise position there, which is having a large, robust public insurance plan, may not eventually make it out of the process in the Senate.
Now, the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, I think, is trying to bridge some of the divides that you just described. Senator Baucus has formed what he calls this coalition of the willing that I think he hopes will be a core group of lawmakers from the Republicans and the Democrats, of course, who can come to some agreement that can get other folks on board later on in the process. What is this group about?
This group is all about trying to find the middle ground, trying to find a bill that can pass the Senate Finance Committee and a bill that will eventually pass the Senate floor. You've got Democrats, including Kent Conrad, who's the Budget Committee Chairman, Jeff Bingaman. You have Republicans that include Chuck Grassley, of course, who's the ranking member on finance, but also Orrin Hatch and Mike Enzi, who I think are both members of the HELP Committee.
Yeah.
So exactly. So Senator Baucus is bringing these folks together. They continue to talk. They put out a statement right before they left town for July 4th saying, we continue to work together. And another news development before the break for the Senate Finance Committee was they said that the Congressional Budget Office, or as we call them, CBO, has scored this list of options. They didn't say what the options were, but would allow them to do a bill for $1 trillion, which, as Julie just noted, could be less than the House bill. So that's where the Finance Committee is now. The continued staff will continue to work over the break, and these discussions resume after the July 4th.
But in terms of this coalition of the willing, the statement that did come out late last week, it was still vague. There was no indication
right.
that they had come to terms on anything very specific, right?
Exactly. It's not agreed to till it's all agreed to. And reporters were in the hallway eagerly waiting Senator Baucus and folks to come out. When are you going to have the bill? He says, we'll have it when it's done. We'll mark up when we're ready to mark up. They don't want to do this until they have the votes. They don't want a repeat of what's happening at the HELP Committee. Hundreds of Republican votes, lots of dissension, lots of time. They want to grease it, if you will, behind the scenes. So when they're ready to go, they're ready to go.
You know, before they broke, there was a lot of pontificating, a lot of reporting, a lot of doom and gloom about prospects for health care reform. Are people really surprised, Julie, that this is becoming difficult?
If they are, then they shouldn't be. I mean, this is how the sausage gets made. In fact, you know, for people who've been watching Congress for a long time, they're saying that they're more optimistic than they used to be. I just came from a breakfast with former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, who's been saying all year that he thought the chances were no better than 50-50. And he just said that he now thinks the chances are much better, that there's a lot of momentum. And I think I tend to agree with him just from looking at how things are going. The Senate is moving forward, albeit not very fast, but that's the Senate's role, to move not very fast. The Senate traditionally moves not very fast. They have painstaking negotiations. They need supermajorities to do things. That's why the Senate is the Senate. The House tends to move according to the will of the majority. That's the way the House is structured. And the House is indeed moving according to the will of the majority. This is Congress doing what Congress does best, which is the Senate moves slower than the House. The House moves forward as the will of the majority does. You know, it could all still blow up. No one's saying this is easy. This has defied, you know, Congress is going back to Teddy Roosevelt. This is a sixth of the economy. It's enormous. There are interest groups. $2.2 trillion we spend on health care. As I like to say, every dollar of that, somebody's income. So there's a lot of, you know, people arrayed who either don't want it to happen or don't want it to happen in a specific way.
And Washington does tend to focus, I think, generally on the points of disagreement as opposed to the points of agreement. But there are certain issues, aren't there, Mary Agnes, where there is general agreement?
Right. There's a great interest and agreement in looking at the way health care is delivered and how it's paid for. Instead of paying by the service, let's look in a more comprehensive way. Let's use health information technology, health IT. Lots of talk about that. There is some disagreement on something called comparative effectiveness, trying to decide which treatments, which drugs are the most cost effective. But there's been more discussion about that, I think, now than in years past. And there's very much consensus on how to change the incentives in the delivery system. And those incentives start at the patient level, and they move all the way up the system.
And there's big chunks of these bills that nobody is talking about or writing about that are common to really all of the bills, that, you know, to the HELP Committee bill, to the Emerging Finance Committee bill, and the House Committee bill, talking about prevention, talking about wellness, just things that the president campaigned on and that Senator McCain campaigned on last year, that were common to those proposals, that are common to all the proposals, that everybody really agrees on, things about getting more primary care practitioners into the workforce. Lots of things that everybody agrees would be a good thing to do and that simply aren't very controversial, but are very important to really improving the healthcare delivery system and to bringing costs down.
In fact, if I may, yeah. you could even make the case that these kinds of reforms about, you know, how and where people receive medical services and what financial incentives are there for practitioners to do, you know, one type of treatment as opposed to another, et cetera, that maybe they make things more efficient. You could make the argument that these things are, in fact, more important in the long term to improving medical care, getting cost growth increases down than, you know, the public plan or the size of a subsidy. But I think there's two. I think there's two main reasons why people don't talk about that as much. And one of them is that it's so agreed on. Obviously, it's sort of less interesting because no one's arguing about it. And the other one is that. Well, this is slightly glib, but I've observed usually on smaller things than healthcare reform. But it seems as though if everyone in Congress agrees on something, it makes it somehow less likely to happen because then no one gets to take credit for it. I don't know if you guys have seen the same thing.
Glib, cynical, choose your word.
A little bit. And then the other thing is that despite that there's this foundation of agreement on so much of this stuff, because these ideas have developed over the years, and you know, lawmakers, particularly those who are on the committees that deal with healthcare, are very familiar with these ideas. I think what Democrats are finding, and I don't know if they're surprised by this or not, but that in spite of that foundation of agreement on some of these very important things, it's not been enough to make Republicans, particularly those who are more conservative, comfortable with the parts of these bills that they don't like. So, I as it stands right now, I don't envision a situation where you find a lot of Republicans going onto the Senate floor and saying, gee, I really don't like this massive intrusion of the government into the medical system, but I do like that we're now going to be paying doctors for full treatments rather than fee-for-service for each individual thing that they do. It's not happening that way.
Let's talk for a moment about this recess. How important is it to what happens once Congress comes back? Are congressmen and senators bracing for what they expect to hear from their constituents?
Right. I think they're going to have town hall meetings in all these districts and states all over the country. Members are going to be hearing about concerns from their constituents. The public, I think, is starting to tune in now to this. You see different public polling from media organizations. While people may support the idea of healthcare reform, they're worried, what does it mean to me? Am I going to lose my doctor? Is my health insurance going to cost me more money? This is how people view healthcare. And so I think that you'll begin to hear a lot of these discussions all over the country during the break, and those will impact lawmakers if they come back and have to go forward as these bills, the deliberations continue, the exact things we're talking about.
And when Congress does return after the July 4th recess, Julie, will President Obama be more involved than he's been in these discussions?
I think you're seeing him ramping up already. He's doing a town hall meeting on Wednesday. He started to do more last week and the week before. Certainly it's time for the president to get engaged and use the bully pulpit. I don't think he's doing that much more on the Hill. He's just trying. It's his job now to bring the public along and to really force public opinion to say, yes, we want what it is that he wants. He's trying to drive the debate towards his principles, as it were. And, you know, he's been very good about kind of triangulating, if you will, saying here are my parameters. You, Congress, go write this bill. You do whatever it takes to get the majority that you need in the House and the Senate, as long as it stays within, you know, these confines. I don't care how you do it. And that's how he's been having these legislative successes all year, leaving it to the leaders of Congress to do what they need to do in order to get a majority, keeping it within the parameters that he sets. Obviously, he does what he needs to do to keep the public moving along, and that's what his job is, and he's so far been doing it with great success, and I imagine that he will continue to do it that way. He does have staff, obviously, meeting continuously on the Hill and, you know, working, and, you know, when they say, will this work? And they'll say, you know, yay or nay. But obviously will continue to go on. The administration will continue to be rather intimately involved, but certainly not trying to dictate that, because that's certainly not what the administration has been doing. And I think they have found a strategy that's been working for them, and they would like to continue to work for
them. Although healthcare reform is on a different order.
Yes, it certainly is. But I would expect that they would continue to do what they've been doing, which is to offer behind-the-scenes advice and counsel, mm-hmm. and big public sort of, you know, president going out and doing his big public events. And I would think that we will see much more of that.
I'd like to ask each of you a final question, if you can answer briefly. And that is, at this moment, does it appear that Congress is on the timetable that the president had laid out for the completion of health care reform? I'll start with you, Jeffrey.
I think I'll answer a yes, but with an ellipsis and a question mark at the end. I think of it this way. In the House, generally speaking, and as Julie pointed out before, anything can blow up at any moment. But the way the House rules are, the majority party can move practically anything it wants to. And if they've set themselves a deadline of July 31st and they begin the committee markups of these bills when they return from the July 4th recess and those markups take a week or so, it just, again, in general, it's hard for me to see how they wouldn't get to that point. The Senate has supposedly about the same deadline. They're also supposed to be in town for an extra week, and that could be the crucial few days they need. However, I think it's going to be a big challenge for the Senate to complete all the work it has left to do, particularly considering one of the committees doesn't even have a bill yet, by the first week of August.
Julie.
I agree with Jeff. I think the House is in good shape. The Senate, they still have not, in the Help Committee, unveiled the two critical pieces of the Senate Help Committee bill. That would be the mandate, both individual and employer, and the whatever they want to do with the public plan. That will have to be unveiled, scored by CBO, and marked up. That's at least another week, probably. The Finance Committee, we don't have a bill yet. So assuming we need two more weeks before you can get to the Senate floor, even if they're here an extra week, I don't know whether the Senate can meet the schedule. So I think the Senate's falling a little behind.
And Mary Agnes, the Senate also has this other distraction, a Supreme Court nominee.
Exactly. That's going to be taking time from members in committee. It'll be take time on the floor. I'd like to take your timeline question and extend it a little bit. I've been hearing, as we all have heard, that a bill would be at the president's desk by October. I don't think so. I think this is going to go on a long time. And my lesson learned was during the Medicare prescription drug benefit. It was 2003. That was one part of the Medicare. It was an addition to the Medicare drug program, and it took to almost Thanksgiving. We're talking about, as Julie mentioned earlier, a revamping of the entire nation's health care system. I think it could very well go into December. That's my opinion.
Okay. Thank you all. Jeffrey Young, Julie Rovner, and Mary Agnes Carey. I appreciate it. And thank you for joining us. I'm Jackie Judd.